This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
World Health Organization warns Israel's indiscriminate strikes are leading Gazans to acute hunger as the regime's genocide continues across the territory. Palestinian resistance fighters destroy multiple Israeli armored vehicles and kill or injure groups of the regime's forces across Gaza. And a Turkish president lashes out at Israel's prime minister over the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, saying Netanyahu is no different from Adolf Hitler. Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says that Israel has committed 16 massacres in a matter of 24 hours as the regime continues pressing ahead with genocide against Gazans. Ministry spokesman said the regime's indiscriminate strikes have killed at least 196 civilians and injured 325 others during that period. Attacks include an airstrike on a residential building near Al-Amal Hospital in southern city of Khan Yunis, leaving 30 people dead. Hamas strongly condemned the attack, calling it a horrific massacre, said Israel's criminal and barbaric attacks are only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army, which has only succeeded in killing unarmed civilians and destroying civilian infrastructure. The Israeli forces also continued intensive attacks on the vicinity of Al-Nasser Hospital. Attacks came as the World Health Organization warned of acute hunger and severe risk of disease in Gaza after more than 11 weeks of fighting.
Today, I repeat my call on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza and jeopardizing the ability of humanitarian workers to help people with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and at severe risk of disease.
WHO says its ability to supply medicine, medical supplies, and fuel to hospitals is being increasingly constrained by the hunger and desperation of people en route to and from hospitals. More than 21,100 people, mostly women and children, have been killed since the start of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza on the 7th of October. Gaza's 2.4 million people are suffering from a severe shortage of water, food, fuel, and medicine, with only limited aid entering the enclave. According to UN figures, an estimated 1.9 million Gazans have also been displaced throughout this time. And our Gaza correspondent has interviewed victims of Israel's indiscriminate attacks on the besieged territory, and they gave horrific eyewitness accounts of the ordeal they've been going through.
Around 30 individuals, mostly women and children, from the evacuees were inside the house when it was attacked by the Israeli missiles. A huge explosion took place that left all of us wounded or killed. Our neighbor's house was leveled to the ground as well, and the people inside the house were massacred. We were all civilians, and we went to that house after our original house was destroyed 2 weeks ago, leaving my brother killed.
We were all civilians residing in our house. All of a sudden, a massive explosion took place. We didn't know what happened. A couple of hours later, I was pulled out from the rubble along with my wife and my daughter. We suffered severe injuries. I was devastated when I was informed that 15 people of my family members were killed then. Many of them were under the rubble. I don't know for what reason we were targeted.
I was sleeping in my house with my family. A shocking explosion took place. I didn't know what happened. I woke up in the hospital and I found my leg was amputated, and I found three of my grandsons were killed. Our residential square was completely destroyed. We are suffering. We don't even get the needed medical care. We don't know when this nightmare will end.
I was originally living in Tal Awa neighborhood in Gaza City. I moved about several houses in Gaza along with my family over the heavy bombardment. We came to the central area under the demands of the Israeli army that claimed the area would be safe. While we were in the house with my relatives, several Israeli missiles pummeled the house. I was the only survivor out of the 23 individuals in the house. We didn't commit any crime. We were all civilians.
I was inside our house. Suddenly, multiple explosions took place and targeted several houses in our square. I didn't know what happened. I found myself in the hospital. They told me that 30 of my neighbors were massacred, and some of them are still under the rubble, and it is pretty difficult to get them out. These massacres must stop. We are all civilians. We didn't do anything.
The Palestinian resistance fighters have inflicted more losses on the Israeli military as the regime continues pressing ahead with its onslaught on Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade says it hit multiple Israeli armored vehicles and installations throughout Gaza, killing and wounding several IOF soldiers. In northern Gaza, a missile raid was conducted on an Israeli helicopter, and in Jabalia, two Israeli tanks were hit. Meanwhile, the Al-Quds Brigades, that's the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, says it struck an Israeli settlement in occupied territories. On another note, Israeli soldiers have been under increased pressure since the regime began its onslaught. The Al-Aqsa News Network reported an Israeli soldier who had recently returned from Gaza woke up in the middle of the night at a military camp in Ashkelon and opened fire on Israeli troops, wounding several of them. Turkish president has lashed out at Israel over the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza and the destruction of the besieged territory. Recep Tayyip Erdogan says there is no difference between the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Nazi Germany leader Adolf Hitler.
It's been 80 days since the attacks began. All the values of humanity have been shot in front of our eyes. We've watched Israel's Nazi camps in their stadiums, didn't we? What kind of work is this? They used to talk about Hitler strangely. How are you any different from Hitler? These will make us look for Hitler. Are Netanyahu's actions any different from Hitler's? Hitler was not as rich as this one. This one is richer than Hitler. All kind of support is coming from the West and the USA. They killed more than 20,000 Gazans.
He made the comments while addressing a ceremony in the capital, Ankara. Erdogan also criticized West support for Israel, stressing Western countries backing Israel are complicit in the regime's war crimes. He added that Turkey is ready to welcome academics and scientists who face persecution due to their views on the Israeli onslaught. Erdogan had previously called Netanyahu the butcher of Gaza, accusing him of actions bordering genocide. He's also described Israel as a terrorist entity, calling for Netanyahu to be prosecuted by an International War Crimes Tribunal. Palestinians have held a funeral for six victims of Israel's drone strike on the Nur Shams refugee camp in West Bank province of Tulkarm. Mourners chanted slogans condemning Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The general strike was also staged in Tulkarm, its surrounding areas and camps to mourn the six young men. The camp raid, during which a number of structures were bulldozed, also left several injuries. Hamas has reacted, saying the deadly attack in Tulkarm will not intimidate Palestinians, who it called upon to continue with their resistance in the occupied West Bank until the regime stops its hostilities. Israeli forces and settlers have killed over 300 Palestinians in the West Bank since the onslaught on Gaza began on October the 7th. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Candiel joined us earlier with more details about the ongoing Israeli atrocities in the occupied West Bank, including Tulkarm.
During the military operation that is still going on, Israeli forces have attacked Palestinians, opened fire at them. According to the doctors and paramedics in the hospital of Thabet, the government hospital, over seven Palestinians were wounded, and many of those Palestinians In addition to the 7th, of course, many of those were had been beaten by the Israeli soldiers, and the Israeli forces have attacked the people while they were in ambulances on their way to the hospital. A Palestinian doctor had even revealed that one of those Palestinians had been stabbed by an Israeli soldier while he was inside the ambulance, and the Israeli forces have hindered the work of the ambulances. They prevented them from reaching the hospital, but after several hours, they were allowed to be transferred. It seems that the Israelis are meant, and they insist, not only to kill Palestinians, but also those who are being wounded. They want them dead. That's why Israeli forces are preventing Palestinian ambulances from reaching those who are who had been wounded and transferring them to hospitals. The case is not in Tul Karim. Every time Israeli forces open fire at Palestinians, whether it's a raid, whether at military checkpoints, every time they prevent Palestinian paramedics and ambulances from reaching the wounded and transferring them, of course, to hospitals. And this means they want Palestinians, all of them are dead. They don't want for the Palestinians to be wounded. And that's why they continue their aggression on a daily basis, of course.
Now, nearly 3 months of Israeli massacre in Gaza is pushing even regime's closest allies to call for a halt to the genocide taking place. Now, the French president has called for what he described as a lasting ceasefire in Gaza. Emmanuel Macron was speaking in a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The French president said his country will work in the coming days in cooperation with Jordan to carry out humanitarian operations in Gaza. Macron expressed his deepest concern about civilian deaths and the humanitarian situation in Gaza. He also called for measures to end Israeli settler violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and prevent the construction of recently planned settlements, which are all illegal under international law. Macron's comments come as Paris has been a staunch ally of Tel Aviv for decades, providing the regime with unlimited financial and military support. Islamic resistance in Iraq has targeted a U.S. base near Erbil International Airport in the Kurdistan region. The resistance group said drone attack came in response to Israel's genocide on Gazans backed by Washington. Group vowed to continue with such retaliatory operations. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement also launched retaliatory missile attacks on Israeli targets near the Lebanese border. Sirens sounded in Galilee and Rosh Hanikra in northern parts of occupied Palestine. Israeli media said that two people were killed in the settlement of Kiryat Shemona by missiles fired from southern Lebanon. Meanwhile, Hezbollah said that it targeted a tent which housed Israeli troops near the Al-Tahira base using a missile. Attack left a number of troops killed and injured. Several Lebanese citizens have been killed as well in latest Israeli airstrikes on southern Lebanon. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh reports.
Well, we just have, of course, news that three of the people who were in that house during the Israeli fighter jet raid yesterday, they were martyred. And we know that Ali Bazzi, along with his brother, Brahim Bazzi, and Brahim's wife, have been martyred. They have been killed. There was a fourth person from the Bazzi family who was also wounded. The Israelis, of course, raided their house, and that was in the middle of the city of Bint Jbeil. This is one of the biggest cities in South Lebanon, especially in the bordering areas. It's true there are bordering areas. It does border, of course, the northern occupied Palestine, but there are many people who remain residing inside the city of Bint Jbeil. And this is basically an area where you have a lot of residential areas. It's maybe sometimes industrial. There are a lot of shops. Many people of that area basically go to Bint Jbeil. And so we did have a lot of residents. Unfortunately, the Israelis raided and attacked and shelled the middle of the city, killing these three people. Of course, we know that usually Hezbollah, after the killing of civilians, there is a retaliation using Katyusha rockets. We are still waiting to see where the retaliation will take place. We know that Hezbollah will definitely retaliate for this crime.
Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps has lambasted the Israeli assassination of a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Shadib said the incident is an effort by Israel to extend its war on Gaza to other parts of the region.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Shadif made this statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayed Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added, the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Shadif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Tehran hopes that lasting peace in the South Caucasus region will be within reach in the early months of the new year. Iran's foreign minister was speaking at a joint press conference with his Armenian counterpart, Ararat Mirzoyan, in Yerevan. Amir Abdullahian said that Iran strongly supports lasting peace in the South Caucasus in tandem to boost the North-South transit corridor. He said a permanent cessation of hostilities guaranteed by regional countries and without foreign interference could have plentiful benefits for all. Amir Abdullahian also announced Iran's readiness to open the Armenian consulate in the Iranian city of Tabriz. Iran's top diplomat stressed that the Islamic Republic plans to further boost ties with neighboring Armenia.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
At least 70 people were killed in Gaza's Maghazi refugee camp on Sunday, December 24th, in one of the deadliest strikes of war, as death toll across the Gaza Strip spirals amid intensive Zionist regime's bombardment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote in this regard, Gaza's deadliest ever war cast a pall of gloom over Beit Lahm on Christmas Eve on Sunday, December 24th, as the death toll spiraled and the Zionist regime shifted its efforts against Hamas to the besieged territories south. Gaza Health Ministry said an Israeli regime strike late on Sunday, December 24th, killed at least 70 people in the Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza and destroyed several houses. If the death toll is confirmed, it will be one of the deadliest strikes since the war began on October 7th. Health Ministry spokesperson Ashraf Al-Qudra said the toll is likely to rise as many families were thought to be in the area at the time of the strike. Qudra said, "What is happening at the Maghazi camp is a massacre that is being committed on a crowded residential square." Hamas issued a statement calling the airstrike a horrific massacre and said it was a new war crime. More than 20,400 people have now been confirmed killed, according to authorities in Gaza, and thousands more are believed dead under the rubble. The vast majority of the 2.3 million Gazans have been driven from their homes, and the United Nations says conditions are catastrophic. Christmas celebrations were effectively cancelled in the occupied West Bank city of Beit Lahm, revered as the birthplace of Jesus Christ, where the Latin Patriarch offered a message of solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. And Pope Francis kicked off Mass at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome with a call for peace. The Catholic leader said, "Tonight our hearts are in Bethlehem, where the Prince of Peace is once more rejected by the futile logic of war, by the clash of arms that even today prevents him from finding room in the world." U.S. President Joe Biden earlier stressed the critical need to protect civilians in a call with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who vowed the Zionist regime would continue the war until all of its goals have been achieved, according to official statements. As heavy fighting raged on, the Zionist regime's army said 154 troops had died in Gaza since it launched a ground invasion on October 27th. 10 Israeli regime troops were killed in battle, one of the deadliest, says, for the Israeli side. Netanyahu said the war is exacting a very heavy price, but we have no choice but to keep fighting. The Zionist regime's withering military campaign, including massive aerial bombardment, has killed 20,424 people, mostly women and children, according to Gaza's health ministry. The Gaza Health Ministry reported recently a strike that killed 10 members of one family in the Jabalia camp in northern Gaza. As the Zionist regime's bombardments continue, Christians around the world marked Christmas Eve. Festivities are usually held in Beit Lahm, where faithful believe Jesus was born, but this year the city is almost deserted, with few worshippers around and no Christmas tree erected, after church leaders decided to forego any unnecessarily festive celebrations in solidarity with Gazans. The Latin Patriarch of Al-Quds arrived recently at the Church of Nativity, clad in the traditional black and white keffiyeh. He said, "Our heart goes to Gaza, to all people in Gaza, but a special attention to our Christian community in Gaza who are suffering. We are here to pray and to ask not only for a ceasefire. A ceasefire is not enough. Violence generates only violence." Sister Nabila Saleh from the Catholic Holy Church in Gaza, where two Christian women were killed by an Israeli sniper earlier this month, according to the Latin Patriarch of Al-Quds, struck a somber tone. She told AFP, "All Christmas celebrations have been cancelled. How do we celebrate when we are hearing the sound of tanks and bombardment instead of the ringing of bells?" At a hospital in Khan Yunis, where much of the fighting has been concentrated recently, Fadi Sayegh, whose family has previously received permits to travel to Beit Lah for celebration, said he would not be celebrating Christmas this year because of Gaza. He said, "There is no joy, no Christmas tree, no decorations, no family dinner, no celebrations." While undergoing dialysis, he said, "I pray for this war to be over soon." Vast areas of Gaza lie in ruins, and its 2.4 million people have endured dire shortages of water, food, fuel, and medicine due to an Israeli regime siege, alleviated only by the limited arrival of aid trucks. The Jordanian army said its air force had airdropped aid to about 800 people sheltering at the Church of Saint Porphyrius in northern Gaza. 80% of Gazans have been displaced, according to the UN, with many fleeing south and now shielding themselves against the winter cold in makeshift tents. Two Palestinian men who had been abducted by the Zionist regime army in Gaza and a medic, that detainees have been subjected to torture in the Zionist regime's custody, including beatings and food deprivation. Naif Ali, 22, said he was abducted in Gaza City's eastern Zeitoun suburb and later taken to an Israeli detention facility and showed cuts on his wrists and other parts of his body. He said, "The Israeli troops tied our hands behind our backs for 2 days. We were not allowed to eat or drink. Neither were we allowed to use the toilet. There were only beatings and beatings." The head of the UN Refugee Agency, Filippo Grandi, urged an end to the suffering in the third month of the war. He said, "A humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza is the only way forward. War defies logic and humanity and prepares a future of more hatred and less peace." And World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom similarly renewed calls for a ceasefire, saying the decimation of the Gaza health system is a tragedy. Meanwhile, reports say thousands took to the streets of Rabat on Sunday, December 24th, to demand an end to Morocco's ties with the Zionist regime. Protesters waved Palestinian flags and held placards reading, "Resistance till victory. Stop Moroccan government normalization with Israel and free Palestine." Rabat normalized ties with the fabricated regime of Israel in 2020, in a deal brokered by former U.S. President Donald Trump's administration. The two regimes are yet to complete the process of setting up full embassies in each other's countries, but Morocco and the fabricated regime of Israel have moved closer together, including by signing a war cooperation pact. We'll be right back.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I'm Umair Biha Mukhtar, your host on IRIB English Radio. This is Muslim Lady. Joining us today is Sister Salma Khalfan, a respected Islamic researcher, and she will enlighten us on the concept of hijab as guided by the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, Sister Salma Khalfan.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you very much for being here. So in the previous episode, we were talking about what Ayatollah Khamenei has to say about why a woman should observe this code of, you know, this dress code as per the Islamic Sharia. Do you have anything to add before we go into the next question?
Ayatollah Khamenei says that families, you know, as we mentioned, are falling apart.
Yeah.
For example, in the West. And then he says that this has turned into a great tragedy. And you know what? It is women who suffer the most from the consequences.
Really?
Because when family suffers and, for example, it leads to divorces and everything, you know, children are so lonely without their, you know, families, their fathers.
Yeah.
And women also face this depression of being away from that family system. They can't think of another family so quickly. You know, there's so much mess around them, as far as them supporting the children. Sometimes the men turn out to be so, you know, like selfish that they don't want to even support their own children.
Yeah.
So, of course, men are also harmed by this situation, but women suffer more, Ayatollah Khamenei says. And this tragedy is passed on to the future generations as well. How? When they grow up, the children, you know, they have this juvenile delinquency. Yeah. In America is rooted in the fact that families have fallen apart.
True.
You know, children, youth become so overtaken by the, you know, the media and illicit behavior, and they end up in jails even if they are so young, you know.
True.
All because of that lack of love within the family system, and it was deep rooted to what? Lack of
modesty.
That modesty and lack of hijab, of course. Of the family opens many grounds of misbehavior in all kinds of, you know, aspects.
Which is such a pity.
Yeah, it's such a pity. If women just had this insight of the fact that how hijab is important to everything, the way you mentioned, she would really observe it with happiness. And we see many women doing that, alhamdulillah, even in the West.
Yeah.
Many women do that, but some have failed to realize it. And unfortunately, even in these current ages, where ilm has progressed so much, knowledge has progressed so much, women are still wanting to, you know, feel that they want to get in the crowd. They want to feel, you know, they want to mix in the crowd of the women who don't observe hijab, mainly because of the Western influence,
Very true. Media. And I think there is this one goal that Allah has set for us. He wants us to reach to Him. And because of all these problems that you've mentioned, you know, families breaking, women and men are going through so many difficulties, children are going through difficulties, this higher purpose is kind of forgotten. Everyone is just worried about these kind of things, and they forget Allah in the picture. They forget that main and stronger and goal that they've come in this world for.
The goal of having that belief, the strong belief,
Yeah, reaching Allah, trying to go forward. It's all in a mess right now because they're just worried about, you know, these problems right now. Like, for example, in the world today, you will see so many people going through so many difficulties, and those who have Allah, they at least feel stronger. For example, the Palestinians, they feel that they have, you know, somebody who is looking after them. But look at the people who don't have Allah. They feel like life is nothing. Yeah. If they're just after their carnal desires and they don't have any motive.
Or after they face problems through not observing hijab, then they feel there's nothing now left.
Yeah, there is nothing more, you know.
So such laws, Ayatollah Khamenei continues, want the best for women. Islam wants women to achieve the peak of what? Intellectual, scholarly, social, political and spiritual growth.
Yeah.
So many areas Islam wants a woman to, you know, like excel and benefit the society and benefit the humanity in the best possible way. All Islamic teachings, especially the issue of hijab, are based on this. So, you know, in turn, he says not only this principle of hijab, all the Islamic principles. And that's what our, you know, Islamic nation is based on, the Islamic Republic of Iran. So the purpose of hijab is not to isolate women. It is absolutely wrong to think that the hijab is a means of isolating women.
Yeah.
Because here he mentions that, you know, the peak of intellectual, social, scholarly, political and spiritual growth. And this can only be, hijab prevents the unprincipled relationship between men and women in society, which will harm the men and the women both, and true, not make them reach these kind of sublime goals.
Very true, very true. So let's just have a short break and we will continue shortly.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back. This is Muslim Lady, and we have been talking with Sister Salma Khalfan about, what Ayatollah Khamenei has to say about observing the code of Sharia, this dress code as per the Islamic Sharia. And Sister Salma, you've mentioned that, you know, one of the very vital things is for a strong family, hijab has a very important role to play, as you have explained. And, you know, in the end, women also suffer even more than men when families break up, and the root cause is the hijab. And Allah wants us to reach the peak and excel in all ways. And sometimes because we are not, you know, modest, we kind of fall back in this area. So we don't reach our full potential. So I had another question. Has Ayatollah Khamenei debated about the principle of hijab between Islam and the West?
Yes, he has, in fact, a lot talked about this issue because he knows that listeners all around the world. And he says in this regard that, as I have repeatedly said,
yeah,
that means he's repeatedly said these things, it is not we who should justify our position on hijab.
Okay.
That means we should not like defend ourselves that, okay, our hijab is this, our hijab is that. It is the corrupt Western culture that should defend its position.
True.
You know, why they don't have the hijab. No fair intellectual can say that we are offering to women is something bad. That means this law is something that is, you know, like contradictory to freedom, or you will suffer on account of this law. No. No fair and intellectual person can say that what this law offers from Allah, of course,
yeah,
to women is something bad. We are calling women to morality. And every woman loves to feel, you know, that she's moral.
True.
Loves to be looked upon it. We are calling women to modesty, hijab, restricted relationship with men, not closed relationship, of course,
yeah,
that no relationship, no, restricted relationship with men, as we talked about earlier. Preserving their human dignity and, of course, respecting oneself, which we talked about. Every woman likes that. In fact, every human should like that. And if they don't, then there's something wrong with them. And avoidance of wearing makeup for strangers. Is this something bad? That's why he says we don't need to defend ourselves. It's the West who need to defend themselves.
True.
This is an honor for Muslim women. This is an honor for women in general. Those who are encouraging women to wear makeup so that they can feast their eyes on their beauty, that is the men, and fulfill their carnal desires, should defend their position. They should defend and say, why we do this kind of thing? Because they won't have any words left, rather than, you know, saying that, okay, there are more crimes committed due to this openness and due to this, mixed relationships.
Allah, Allah, Subhanallah, Allah, Allah, walhamdulillah, Allah, Allah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Allah, Allah, walhamdulillah, ya Allah.
If you have any suggestion, our email is englishradio@irib.ir.
They should explain, they, that means the West, should explain why they humiliate women so much. And you know, in turn, in reality, women are humiliated in the end. They have to explain. How wise our leader is, mashallah. Our culture is approved by moral and intellectual people living in the West. You know, he says that moral and intellectual people approve of our culture.
True.
Even they, whether they be in the East or the West.
Yeah.
Here he mentions the West. Even in the West, modest, dignified and respectable women are not prepared to let strangers feast their eyes on their beauty and fulfill their desires. There are many other things that the corrupt Western culture should explain. For example, the European custom and, what is their reaction pertaining to hijab, inshallah, in our next episode.
Inshallah. That is very interesting, actually, because the way you mentioned, it's usually the oppressors who have to kind of come and say that, oh, yeah, this is the reason why we are oppressing. It's kind of forced onto us that we have to constantly come and say, oh no, we have to do this hijab because of this. No, we have to, you know, we have to try and justify ourselves because of the hijab that we are wearing. No, we should come and ask them that, why are you letting your society be so immodest? Why are you kind of, you know, breaking the grounds for immodesty and just people after their carnal desires? Like, this is how we have to come across. But we always feel like we have to defend ourselves.
Yeah, the complex, isn't it? It shouldn't be there.
It should be that we are the strong ones. We are very true to our religion. And unfortunately, it's because we don't realize the wisdom behind this modesty that we always feel like we have to come and say, no, you know, the reason I'm wearing this is because of this, this, this. You know, we kind of feel bad for ourselves even when we're explaining it. No, we have to be strong. And I feel like what Ayatollah Khamenei has said and what you have, you know, explained very beautifully is very true. And inshallah, we, you know, are able to be stronger in our understanding of this hijab, inshallah. Thank you very much for your valuable time again. And we hope to see you in the next episode. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening. This was Hijab by Muslim Lady. And we will see you all in the next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Who is the love one?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illa Allah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return. La ilaha
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illa Allah.
Muhammadur Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's destruction and kidnappings of theater staff are part of a wider attempt to break Palestinians in the West Bank psychologically and emotionally. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, when Mustafa Sheta, a father of four and the general manager at the Freedom Theater, was abducted from his home recently and blindfolded, incarcerated, beaten and deprived of food or water, it was not a random event. The Zionist regime troops, who were half his age, had asked neighbors where he lived. They'd come looking for this portly, middle-aged artistic producer specifically. Nobody would mistake Sheta, a gentleman with a fatherly demeanor, for a terrorist. He was not a military target. They beat him up for being the general manager of a theater. That was his crime. But the current Israeli regime invasion of the Jenin refugee camp is an exercise in torture with no military objective. Since dawn, the Jenin Brigade fighters had been exchanging gunfire with the Zionist regime army in nearby Jenin City, leaving Jenin camp empty of armed militants. The Zionist regime army took advantage of this and abducted over 500 people inside the camp, including Sheta. Around 100 people were abducted, the majority of them men or youths. Ahmad Tobasi, the creative director of the Freedom Theater, was one of them. He confronted the Zionist regime troops recently, asking why they were attacking the theater. They beat him and raided his home, smashed his computer, his iPad and plants, before abducting him. Tobasi is no stranger to the Zionist regime's brutality. He says his earliest memory was being kicked by an Israeli troop when he was a child, hiding in the alleyway next to his humble home. He was also abducted as a youth. But then, Giuliano Merchamis, who founded the Freedom Theater, when Tobasi now leads, took him under his wing and gave him the work in the theater. It was this work that gave Tobasi the chance to travel to Norway, where he lived, worked, and attained Norwegian citizenship. But it was his courage and sense of cultural pride that brought him back to Jenin camp and ultimately led to him being singled out by the Zionist regime troops and given the beating this week that left bruises on his legs and back. These wounds are a visceral acknowledgement of his ability to inspire hope and dreams in the youth of Jenin. Jamal Abu Jaz was also abducted by the Zionist regime troops who were beating him. Abu Jaz is one of the theater's trainers for the younger members, and he was part of the summer camp teaching crew. Not a dangerous guy, unless your fear is the social cohesion of a community under siege and passing on a sense of self, continuity, and Palestinian pride. If this is what you fear, it makes sense to beat up and incarcerate this sensitive, kind young poet whose nerves are now shot and who smokes a lot of cigarettes to help him deal with what is now behind his sad eyes and shy smile. Abu Jaz was severely beaten and his camera and phone were stolen. Hanin Amin, director of the Palestinian Authority's Ministry of Culture, said numerous homes in the camp, including those belonging to individuals working in the cultural field, were raided. These savage attacks directly target everything that enhances national and cultural consciousness through the creative role played by these institutions and individuals, contributing to the enhancement and narration of the Palestinian story in the voices of its people and preserving national identity through their arts and culture. The electricity, water, and internet were cut off days ago. The roads have been destroyed again by modified caterpillar bulldozers known as D-9s. Military dogs were sent into refugees' homes along with tear gas grenades. The constant rattle of gunfire was all around and sounded like raindrops. For weeks, the roads remained denuded of their tarmac, waiting for the Palestinian Authority to patch up the broken pipes and snapped wires to repave the blacktop surface that allows kids to be driven to school and ambulances to make it to the hospital in time. This is one reason why their surface is yet again destroyed and everyone's hearts are breaking. There is certainly a practical reason for destroying stuff. It makes life hard. Breaking roads means less movement. But it's not only about this. In fact, we would suggest it's more about the psychological aspects of war. It's about making the camp's residents feel powerless. It's about making them give up and move to Jordan. And what could be more demoralizing than smashing the internal walls of a much-loved theater with mallets, then blindfolding the theater staff in front of their families, handcuffing them, and shooting rapid rounds of live ammunition inside the theater itself, all while it's around 16 degrees outside and raining. Surprisingly, perhaps, there is a good answer to this rhetorical question, and it turns out that there were other ways the Zionist regime forces could find to break the Palestinian spirit, blasting recordings of Hanukkah songs over the tannoy system of the main mosque in the center of Jenin refugee camp, while the Zionist troops spray the Star of David into residents' homes and hang Israeli flag on their buildings. Momen Saadi, an actor and educator at the Freedom Theatre School, says, "This is the ugliness of the occupation. The occupation encroaches on our property, works on westernization and sings disgusting songs. Nothing shouts colonizer like a flag on a post, especially when paired with these acts of cultural genocide, defined in the Hague Convention, Rome Pact, and World Heritage Convention, all flagrantly broken and bruised, alongside the bones and bodies of colleagues and friends. Wafa, a 26-year-old mother and homemaker whose husband is unemployed as a direct result of the Zionist regime's violence and whose one-year-old has not been able to access formula milk for weeks and is no doubt now undernourished, said, "Mina, it's terrifying. My children are terrified by the sound of the roaring and the screaming. Our neighborhood is full of troops. My husband is very nervous. They say the Israeli troops beat them until they faint." Her husband was subsequently abducted by the Zionist regime forces. This feels like a moment to mention the fate of the much-loved horse sculpture that lived by the gate to the camp, which was taken hostage by the Zionist regime troops, and the giant gates that framed the entrance on the other side, which have now been ruined in this depraved orgy of cultural destruction. Punishing the resistance by attacking a monument and abducting a horse as a hostage. This is what oppression looks like visually, like broken bits of horse statues. It's also about eradicating a culture, but you can't erase the collective yearnings and communal memories of a people simply by blowing it up. Their targets are non-combatants. They are mothers, dads, kids, the elderly. So why the tear gas, incessant low-flying drones and bulldozers? Why the warplanes dropping air-to-land missiles and the anti-tank grenades with the super loud booms that haunts dreams from the first time kids hear them in Jenin to the last time they hear them in Nablus? The rumor was that this siege would last 5 more days, like the siege in the Second Intifada, when Jenin camp was etched into the pages of history. In the first 72 hours, at least 12 men were killed, and one young boy, Bashar Haruni, whose voice hadn't yet dropped. The 12th to die was a student at the Freedom Theater, 16-year-old Musa Ibn Malik, a joyful, shy boy. Her mother stayed a long time with her sisters and brothers during the Zionist regime's invasion of Jenin camp in September.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. We'll be right back. This is